extended no later than June 2025, and it looks like he wanted to keep his masters happy. So right after his appointment, he kind of stages this death trap and kills innocent men, women, and children.
A ship carrying humanitarian activists has departed from Italy's Gallipoli port, aiming once again to challenge the naval blockade of the Gaza Strip.
And all the comrades, we are about to sail to Gaza to challenge the blockade imposed on our brothers and sisters, and to challenge this illegal blockade, but also to say a clear message, to say it clearly and loudly: stop the genocide, stop the illegal blockade, stop using famine as a war weapon.
And I just want you to look at those toys. Who can dare arrest a boat with toys for children? Who can dare arrest a boat with food for children, with baby formula? Because we are talking about that. We are only civilians on a boat to give food and to break an illegal blockade. We are talking about that. We are not dangerous. We are just in the side of humanity.
The Handala, part of the Freedom Flotilla Coalition, is transporting civilian activists, including lawyers, doctors and journalists, on a mission of solidarity. Alongside life-saving aid, the group is bringing toys for the children of Gaza, symbolizing hope amid hardships. Last month, another mission led by the Flotilla Coalition aboard the Madleen ship ended with Israeli naval forces seizing the vessel. Tensions remain high across the occupied West Bank as Israeli forces carry out nearly daily raids into Palestinian towns and refugee camps. In the latest wave of incursions, at least 12 Palestinians were abducted, 9 in Bethlehem and 3 others in separate raids in Salfit Governorate and Nablus. Meanwhile, in occupied Al-Quds, Israeli settlers conducted a provocative tour through the courtyards of the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound, Islam's third holiest site, further inflaming tensions on the ground. The Israeli military and settlers have escalated their raids across the West Bank over the past month. Nearly 1,000 Palestinians have been killed across the occupied West Bank since the regime began its Gaza genocide in October 2023. The leader of Yemen's Ansarullah movement has reiterated the country's firm stance in supporting the Palestinian people in the besieged Gaza Strip. Abdul Malik al-Houthi emphasized that the Yemeni people will continue their serious and active support for Gaza in all fronts, including through military operations, mobilization, and public campaigns. He described the severe shortage of food and essential aid in Gaza as a horrific tragedy and profound injustice. Houthi warned that people, especially children, are entering the most extreme phase of starvation in Gaza. He condemned Israel for turning aid distribution points into death traps, calling it a part of the regime's genocidal campaign. Houthi also slammed Arab and Muslim nations for their inaction in the face of mass starvation in Gaza, saying their silence has emboldened Israel and the US to carry out their crimes without any fear of consequences. The leader of Ansarullah urged all Muslims to mount pressure on Israel to lift the blockade on Gaza. Iran's Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi says France, Germany and the UK lack any legal, political or moral standing to invoke the snapback mechanism of the 2015 nuclear deal. Abbas Araghchi made a comment in a letter to UN Secretary-General Antonio Guterres, the Security Council's president and its members, also EU's High Representative Kaya Kallas. Iran's top diplomat added that France, Germany and the UK backed Israel's aggression on Iran, rejected the JCPOA's main pillars and failed to uphold their commitments to the deal. He said Iran exhausted the JCPOA's dispute resolution process after the US quit the deal, but the E3 instead joined Washington's maximum pressure campaign against Iran. Author and journalist Robert Fantino joined us earlier to discuss whether Iran can trust the West in nuclear talks after the US violated the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action.
Iran maintained its part of the deal. It was UN weapons inspectors had free and open access to anywhere in the country they wanted. Even the US Congress was certifying quarterly to the US President, first Obama and then Trump, that Iran was in complete compliance. So then Donald Trump withdrew it unilaterally, bringing then the EU partners, EU signatories with him, and violated the agreement. So of course there'd be no trust, and of course there's no idea of activating the snapback mechanism because it makes no sense whatsoever. It's the double standard. It's the hypocrisy of the West, led by the United States, which is the master of hypocrisy. But it's very clear. This was, as you mentioned, a violation of international law to attack a sovereign nation. And yet the West went along with it and aided, in many regards, aided the bombing and the attack by Israel and the United States. Complete lack of respect for international law. Iran is independent of U.S. demands. Iran does not support the brutal occupation and now genocide of Palestine, and the U.S. does. And any country that doesn't is going to be in the U.S.'s crosshairs. And that's what is happening and what did happen with Iran.
A Russian vessel has arrived in Iranian waters for combined maritime rescue and relief exercises held jointly with Iran in the Caspian Sea. The main phase of the drills, codenamed Castle Rex 2025, will be held with the participation of the Northern Fleet of Iran's Navy and Russian vessels after joint coordination meetings. Observers from other Caspian Sea countries will also be present at the three-day maneuvers. The exercises are aimed at improving maritime safety and security in the region and increased maritime interaction with naval forces of Caspian Sea states. The IRIB SOAP Media Center has held an international ceremony to honor Iranian media martyrs, especially those who lost their lives during a 12-day U.S.-Israeli imposed war on the country. A group of journalists, media activists, and media managers from across the world attended the ceremony to pay tribute to the martyrs and condemn U.S.-Israeli terrorism against media. Participants chanted slogans against Israel and the U.S., denouncing their aggression against Iran. The ceremony featured speeches by several Iranian and international figures. Keynote speakers included the head of Iran's state broadcaster, Peyman Jebeli, and the head of the IRIB's World Service, Ahmad Nouruzi. Our nation is a source of pride for history, for our country and homeland, and we are proud to be the national news and radio networks of such nation. And I would like to pray for the soul of all of our martyrs from the IRIB in particular. I hope they will have their end spots at the promised heaven and will be rewarded by our Lord Almighty. And I hope God will grant us that final victory, that final promised victory. And I hope we will witness the day of the pride of all the nations in the region and their victory against the child-killing regime of Israel. These huge crimes should never be forgotten, and 16th of June should be forever remembered on the calendar, because it will be the start and the beginning of a global movement. Well, of course, in a symbolic way, we are going to, in the presence of our foreign media journalists and also members of the families of the martyrs, they are going to come and sign this text that we have prepared for this day to be named as the Day of Terrorism Against Media Members and Terrorism Against Journalism. Nouruzi's remarks called for June the 16th, the day the Israeli regime targeted the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting, to be registered internationally as a day against terrorism on media workers. He also honored all media workers, especially those killed in Gaza, as martyrs in the path of struggle against imperialism. Nouruzi emphasized that Israel had been compelled to treat the media as an independent eighth front in its operations, describing this as a point to be proud of. He also expressed gratitude to the international journalists who traveled to Iran to show their solidarity with their Iranian counterparts. A group of foreign journalists have come to Iran for a first-hand coverage of the aftermath of the recent Israeli strikes on Tehran, challenging claims that the attacks only targeted military sites. On the fourth day, the delegation has visited the Iranian Broadcast Headquarters building, known as the Glass Building, which was destroyed in an Israeli attack. Our correspondent Gizem Shahmadi talked to us earlier from the site. Let us hear what she had to say.
Today, on the fourth day, as you mentioned yourself, they are visiting the IRIB glass building. This is what's left of the building. We had reported this. We are quite familiar with this scene, what is left of the IRIB headquarters, known as the glass buildings, attacked. And actually, the news was being broadcast live at the time of the Israeli attack. So the journalists are now right here, and they've had the chance to talk to the news anchor, Ms. Sahar Emami, who was actually reading the news at the time when the Israeli attack happened. And this is the studio which was attacked at that time during the live broadcast. And the journalist, this is what's left of that studio, and the result of the Israeli attack, the huge material damage that has been done to the glass building and to the main studio of Iran's IRIB news network.
At least one person has been killed in Ukraine following new waves of Russian strikes on the capital city as both sides intensify attacks on each other's military and economic infrastructure. Ukrainian authorities say the overnight attack caused widespread destruction across Kyiv that led to the death of one man. The Ukrainian army said it shot down 18 Russian drones and continues to engage Russia on multiple battlefronts. Meanwhile, Russia's defense ministry says it targeted Ukrainian military infrastructure, adding that its troops have taken control of another settlement in the Donetsk region in recent days. Russia has also said its air defense systems have shot down multiple aerial bombs, rockets, and hundreds of Ukrainian drones. On Sunday, Ukrainian president said that his country has proposed a new round of peace talks as previous rounds of negotiations have ended inconclusively. Hundreds of Australians have thronged the streets of the capital, Canberra, voicing support for the Gazans under the Israeli genocidal war. The demonstrators gathered outside Parliament House before marching towards the Israeli embassy. Holding Palestinian flags and chanting anti-Israeli slogans, protesters urged the Australian government to impose sanctions on Israel in response to its ongoing genocide in Gaza. The rally marks the beginning of a three-day protest set to culminate on Tuesday, which coincides with the opening of the new parliamentary term. Meanwhile, tens of thousands of Moroccans have also demonstrated in the capital Rabat against the dire humanitarian situation in the Gaza Strip. Protesters denounced the Israeli crimes in the war-ridden territory and called for an end to the regime's starvation campaign. And that is a wrap for this hour's news bulletin. Thank you so much for staying with us.
That my prophet Muhammad was born. How did The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladheena amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis sabri was salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of RIB English Radio, now it's time to listen to a short speech by Sheikh Amin Rastani.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. That last inspiration that we want to take, inshallah, from the day of Ashura, I felt would be good to be that of death itself. And that everything is going to end, brothers and sisters. I want to share with you some hadiths, inshallah, as much as I can today. As many hadiths as I can that speak of this the importance of this death. The good thing about Ashura is that it really helps a person detach. You know, after they raise the head of Imam Hussein on the spears, you're just like, I don't really care too much right now about dunya. Yeah, it's one of the etiquettes. That on the day of Ashura, we don't work. Now, some people think it's haram, whatever. If it's disrespectful to Ashura, it's haram. Other than that, it's makruh to work. A believer doesn't need to be told not to work on such a day, unless they're forced to, of course. Why? Because you have this feeling in you that you don't care too much. Yeah? Now, after Ashura, a little bit passes and we go back to normal again, that's fine. Because the wound of Karbala isn't a fresh one. It's one of 1,400 years ago. If we were back then, we probably couldn't eat or drink and we would probably die with that. As they say, some of the wives of Imam Hussein, that's what happened to them. They just couldn't live anymore. And they eventually died maybe a year or two after. So, yes, I was saying that this Karbala, Ashura, helps us come to terms with this. Helps us to have a temporary but total detachment. Okay, for all of us. So with that, I want to remind that I chose this night for this topic. So let's go through some of these hadiths here about the remembrance of death. Imam Ali salawatullahi wasalamu alayhi. Ma unzila al-maut haqqa manzilatihi man adda ghadan min ajalihi. or ma anzal al mauta haqqa manzilatihi man adda ghadan min ajalihi, that a person has not given death its proper due and credit, and has misunderstood death, actually, the one who considers and counts tomorrow as part of his life or her life. He says, if you count tomorrow as part of your life, like you're confident that there's a tomorrow for me, then you haven't understood death. And that's how dangerous death is. Before you know it, you're gone. Ya Allah. Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salam, ma min ahli bayt sha'r wala wabar illa wa malak al-maut yatasaffahuhum fi kulli yawm khams marrat. There is not a family out there, he says, that except that the angel of death and comes and strokes their heads 5 times per day. Now, is that the times of salat? What time is it? Whatever. All in all, malak al-maut is our neighbor. He's our buddy. We don't even know it. He's there every day, stroking our heads 5 times, yeah? As if, hey, I'm waiting for you. One of these times when he strokes, with that stroke, will probably go our soul as well. And so here I am thinking that, yeah? I'm going to live forever. That's how beautiful Allah has done it, by the way. Allah has done it so beautifully. You know how? Allah didn't let us know when we're going to die. Everyone out there knows we're going to die. I don't see them spending billions of dollars on the cure for death. They do that for AIDS, cancer, COVID, things like that. But they don't do it for death. Why? Don't you think that we can reverse that? They know they can't reverse that one. That's one thing everyone agrees on. Okay? So, if this is something that everyone agrees on, everyone knows is happening, then why is it that we feel like it's never going to happen? Because we don't know when it's going to happen. Allah does it so beautifully. That's why we need these reminders. Because if we don't have these reminders, we actually will practically think that we're eternal. And the greats, they say, yes, we are eternal, but there's a bridge of death to that eternity. That's the part we kind of forget about. Prophet Isa was asked, who are the awliya'ullah, those chosen ones of Allah? Tell us something about those. How can we know that someone is a chosen one of Allah? What is one of their characteristics, at least? It says, "Ahabu dhikr al-maut wa taraku dhikr al-hayat." One of the signs of those who are awliya'ullah is that they love the remembrance of death. And it doesn't say they hate, but they leave and abandon and put aside remembrance of dunya. I mean, when you're in the dunya, when you're in this life, do you need to remember it? You're here. You remember something that is absent, right? That's not there yet. So why talk about it so much and remember it so much when we're already here anyway, number one. Number two, and we know it's going to end. Yeah? And so let's talk about that which is going to come and is never going to end. That's for them. And so, brothers and sisters, if you ever see me or anybody else either speaking in a way or living in a way, or having a certain lifestyle in a way that the first thing or one of the first things that comes to your mind and catches your attention about them is the flashiness of dunya, yeah? The glitter and glamour of dunya, yeah? This is not a culture of Ahlul Bayt. Just remember that, please. Let's be a little picky and selective. أَحَبُّ ذِكْرَ الْمَوْتِ وَتَرَكُوا ذِكْرَ الْحَيَاتِ. All right, so these are some hadiths on the importance of the remembrance of death. But why? What does remembrance of death do for us? Well, it removes heedlessness, ghafla, forgetfulness. It removes all of that from us, as I said. Yeah, we were created for somewhere else. We forget.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi Karimun Adi Alimun Hali Hakimun Mati. شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمن
we'll be right back.
Welcome to Women of Resistance. A woman doesn't grow weaker with oppression. In fact, she grows stronger because God gives her strength. This from a mother of 11 and many more grandchildren living in a tent in Gaza, having been displaced from Al-Saftawi to Al-Shifa, Al-Daraj, Al-Saftawi again, Al-Sabra, Khan Yunis, Rafah, Baitul Hanun, and back to Khan Yunis. Trump, she says, can go back to his home because Gaza is their home, their holy land, and they are not giving it up. Here is more of Hiyam.
Time seems to operate differently in Gaza. For those who choose to distort or misrepresent the people and their land, time did not start before October the 7th. For those who have always connected with their home, connected with their people, and connected with their land, history may now have a before and after the 7th of the 10th, 2023, but the ties that bind are unbreakable. This is especially true for those who have seen the ebb and flow of Palestinian life play out. Hayam has lived through so much, and as bad as things have been, her foundation has helped to set the scene. For Gaza's enduring generation, the elders who have seen death and destruction before, the new genocide represents a fresh hell. The roll call of the martyrs, the missing, the injured, and the permanently scarred, continues to grow. Gaza, before the new Nakba, was an area that saw the lives of the people wholly controlled by the whims of Tel Aviv. Yet somehow Palestinians found a way to make the land work for them, carving out a life amidst the checkpoints, the blockades, and the restrictions. The uncertainty of the constant displacements, of not knowing where the next loss will come from, has had devastating impact on families like Hayam's. The hardships have only strengthened Hayam's fortitude and sense of connection to the land. Those who feel people with this literal grounding to their communities will be easily shifted have another thing coming. The world has failed Palestine. It has so far bitterly failed Gazans. It's not too easy to put yourself in the shoes of a Palestinian. They want what everyone else wants: food, clothing, shelter, peace. Now a concerted effort by Israel to ostensibly starve the resistance out of Gazans is hitting the youngest and most vulnerable. Tel Aviv is so far ignoring international laws and moral norms and using the denial of food as a weapon of mass murder. The false dawns and brief moments of respite have been a temporary balm to salve the open wounds of Palestinians attempting to stay alive inside Gaza. But the fresh bombs fall all too quickly, and the old stories with ever battered and bruised bodies play on repeat.
Joining me in the studio today to discuss Hiyam's journey is Maria Galastegui, a peace campaigner and coordinator at Peace Strike Campaign. Welcome, Maria.
Oh, we're very pleased to be here.
Thank you. Maria, you know, Hiyam says something amazing. She says a woman is not become, she becomes stronger with oppression. She doesn't become weaker. But we do witness women breaking, you know, apart. What is so special about these women that the more they are oppressed, the stronger they get?
Yes, I think just naturally somebody's got to step up and take the lead, because obviously she's got 11 children and grandchildren, and she's got responsibilities. Some people will be broken by the trauma. I mean, they're surrounded by trauma the whole of their lives. It, depending on what age you are, I guess it affects you differently. But obviously she's got responsibilities. She's stepped up, and she's a role model for the people in her lives. So it's essential that somebody like her, she keeps going against all the odds. Mm. And understand she's got a back problem, so living in a tent, trying to cook, having to be on the floor, and her pain level must be, you know, incredibly difficult for her life. But obviously she's pulling it all together, and yeah, she's keeping going no matter what the odds.
The thing is, Maria, you know, we speak to these women on a weekly basis, and I'm astounded that every woman is the same. You know, it's we haven't come across anyone who says, I can't do this anymore, you know, I can't take it anymore. They seem to actually thrive, in not in a positive manner, of course, but the survival instinct that kicks in. You know, you are a peace activist. You must have seen a lot of issues around there. Do you find their case to be different? Do you find their resilience to be different? Or is this something that when you're put in a situation, you just rise up to it?
Well, it's incredible. I mean, no one's been challenged the way they have.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we've all got options. If you're doing something, things get too difficult, you've got the option to opt out.
Yeah.
They don't have that option. And even if they did now, they can't. Too much blood has been spilled. You know, not just from their lives and the children and the people around them every single day, but also the history of their parents going way back. So they can't give up the land now. All that would have been for nothing, in a sense. All that sacrifice, all that bloodshed. So they can't, and they won't. So that's the irony of the situation, because they've been put in a position now where they want to drive them off the land or kill them. But there's no way that they can do that, because it's a principle, it's a moral, it's the history. And they're making a stand for not just their humanity, but actually, ironically, for ours. They're showing us a way of resistance.
Absolutely.
They're teaching us.
Yeah, yeah, but, I mean, Maria, the amount of displacements, we heard how many places she's been to, you know. She's scared of sending a child out because they might get bombed, but then they also get bombed, you know, within
yes.
the tent.
Yes.
Now we see when they go to, you know, receive aid, food aid, they are being targeted and killed.
Yes.
How much worse does it have to get, Maria, when the world takes account of this, takes stock of this and does something about it?
The world is aware. We are all aware. Globally, the support is for Palestinians, without a doubt. But it's the political system that's running the world. So grassroots activists will do everything. And as you know now, they've got the Freedom Flotilla. They're taking a risk. But they're showing the way that people do care. And that's a message to Palestine. There's a march going to Palestine. There's lots of things going on, but by grassroots campaigns. The big campaigns are doing marches and rallies, but they're not effective. They're not empowering the people. All that power when people come together. But after a march, it's dissipated. It's not effective, and it's not reaching out to Hayim in Gaza.
Absolutely, yeah.
And that's the problem. We're not empowered. So
it is an interesting question, because, you know, I think, you know, it's good that all these things are happening, but it probably shouldn't have taken this long for us to be where we are today. Why has it taken this long, Maria? For example, you know, this march to Gaza. Why has it taken a year and a half?
I think because we normally, as the peace camps campaigns traditionally go, people join the big marches, the big campaigns. We've got video now. Everything's filmed. It all goes out into the world. But in reality, that power is not effective. So people then kind of waste their time, but they think that the next march will do it. It's big enough. It's got bigger. The influence for the governments, they will listen to us and they will follow what we say. But it doesn't happen, and we keep on going. And so this is all kind of wasted time, because we passed the emergency way, way, way back. We're beyond the emergency
yeah,
now. It should have come into effect, and it hasn't, because I hate to say this, but there's gatekeepers
yeah.
in everything.
Yeah. And, I mean, let's be honest, the gatekeepers are the Israeli lobby, really, when we're talking
yes.
about around the world,
yes.
who have taken hostage our politics here. How do we get rid of that, Maria? Because, you know, our governments, our politicians should be listening to us, but they're listening to foreign powers. Why?
I think because on their way up to being a politician, somewhere along the line, they're compromised. You know, a lot of them are friends of whatever, and They get compromised along the way. And when they actually get into power, instead of, you know, like the Labour Party doing now, what we're doing, there's been a court case about arming Israel to stop arms, all arms. The components of the F-35s should be finished. It's carrying on.
Absolutely.
And at the same time, now they've decided to say, oh, by the way, you know, things are getting very difficult. Israel needs to stop. We need to pull back on this. But they're too weak. They haven't been strong enough. They should have put sanctions on Israel and boycotts at least about a year and a half ago, at the very, you know.
Absolutely, and even the change of tone, it's taken forever for that to even, you know, we hear a foreign minister speak about these things. This should have been right at the onset.
Yes.
But let's talk about your journey, Maria. I want to hear, what is it that you do as a peace campaigner, and, you know, what challenges have you faced in that journey?
My campaigning goes back 22 years, and a lot of it was from the Iraq War. So the example was we the whole world marched, the biggest marches ever in our time, yeah. And we thought we had stopped the Iraq War. And, you know, because a lot of it was based on lies that were actually came out at the time, same like as now. Things have been discredited, even as they've been said, but it doesn't seem to make any difference. So we did go to war with Iraq. It didn't stop the government. And then it never stopped the government, and we only came out of Iraq and Afghanistan when the Americans decided, we need to pull out, because it suited them.
Yes.
So we pulled out, and they're worse than ever they were. You know, the argument of why we went in was, it was a ruse. Mm. It's all to do with business and strategic power. So now we're back at the same situation with Palestine. We haven't empowered ourselves. So peace strike does, we call strikes for peace.
Okay.
So you go on strike. You don't have to be on a march. Mm-hmm. You can just be. So we've got a red alert for Palestine this Friday coming, which is the 6th of June. And we're trying to spread it like as much as we can, the message.
So, tell us, what is it that people are supposed to do?
Well, you don't go to work, you don't go to school, you buy nothing, you don't use your credit card, you don't use a debit card, nothing in the system that enables the system, because the system is allowing the war machine to carry on, and we're trying to stop it. But obviously it doesn't apply to emergency workers or essential workers, and we have to use our common sense. If we have to do certain things, we do. But the point is, we need to go in strike mode now and shut down 4 days, different days that we but the first one, the big one, will be this Friday, and we need to build them up. It's grassroots. It's not controlled. It's independent. So basically, we, the people, the grassroots people, we call the strikes, yeah. And we do it ourselves. It's a do-it-yourself campaign.
And I think that's where it has to come now, because we cannot wait for politicians. It should be them taking the action. But really, it has to be. And I think, you know, so much more needs to be done, so much more awareness. So many more people really need to move from just not supporting Israel to taking action, as you say.
Yes.
Thank you so much, Maria, for honoring us today with your presence. It is much appreciated. And thank you all. We leave you with the sounds of Palestine by the artist Saif. Goodbye.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 11,740 kilohertz for Southern Africa. And FM, 91.5 megahertz for Iran. You can also listen to the English channel of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. You can also listen to the radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our radio quality and other means.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of a speech delivered on November 27th by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with besiegees from throughout the country.
In those rich countries ruled by the system of domination, countries such as the U.S. and some European countries, which are wealthy, people die of hunger on the streets. As for the people in other countries, they display injustice as much as they can. It is against freedom as well. The most important kind of freedom for a nation is the public freedom of countries. In other words, independence. Once, I said that independence means the freedom of nations. When we speak about freedom, we are speaking about the freedom of nations so that they can freely do what they want to do. The system of domination is against such freedom. One day with colonialism, another day with neocolonialism, and today with modern methods, the methods used in soft wars, they create a disastrous situation for nations. Of course, wherever necessary, they bring their armed forces to the arena and they do not have any scruples whatsoever.
A very dangerous plot was foiled by the people themselves.
In the present time, the Americans have entered the eastern part of the Euphrates in Syria, and they say they are there for the sake of oil. Is that area your home? It belongs to another country, but they say that they have shown their presence because there is oil there and that they have come for oil. They do not feel embarrassed to acknowledge this, and they say it openly. Or they enter a country such as Iraq without any permission. They do not seek the permission of the government of that country, and they do not go to the capital. Rather, they go to their own bases because they have some bases there. This signifies that they officially insult the freedom and independence of nations. So the system of domination is both anti-justice and anti-freedom. Islam is the flag bearer of justice and freedom. Islam is the flag bearer of justice. It is the flag bearer of freedom, and it does so without any considerations and in an outspoken manner. Islam does not hide its claims. It confronts oppression and injustice in an outspoken manner.
To Allah.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Welcome to all our listeners from around the world. I'm Asma here in Tehran announcing our program schedule for the next hour. Hope you will accompany us into the early hours of this morning. We start tonight's lineup with today's special daily mixed format program that deals with various Islamic and Iranian occasions. That will be followed by Hadith of the Day. The program presents a hadith from the Holy Prophet and members of his household, the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them, along with a brief explanation and commentary on the hadith. Then we have our radio productions feature. And to round up this hour's programs, we have Let's Recite the Quran. The program teaches eloquent recitation of the Quran at level 2.
Through the same is the light of guidance and the ship of salvation.
IRIB English Radio in the month of Muharram presents today's special. Every day for 15 minutes.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Salam, dear friend, and thank you for choosing this program to listen to. This is today's special from IRIB English Radio. At the first moment of this program, we express our condolences on the martyrdom of Shia's fourth Imam, Imam Sajjad, peace be upon him. Today is Monday, 25th of Muharram, 1447 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 30th of Tir, 1404 of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar, and the 21st of July, 2025 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. Again, I offer my condolences on all Shia Muslims all around the world on the sad occasion on the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Sajjad, Imam Zainul Abidin, peace be upon him. The 34-year period of imamate or divinely decreed leadership of Imam Zainul Abidin, the son of successor of Imam al-Husayn, witnessed the despotic rule of a series of Umayyad despots. However, because of the great impact of the tragedy of Karbala on people's conscience, the self-styled caliphs did not dare to openly insult Islam. Moreover, for a period of 10 years following the death of tyrant Yazid, the Umayyads were almost on the verge of collapse, while in Mecca, Abdullah ibn Zubayr had declared himself as caliph. These 10 years were indeed torturing for the fourth infallible heir of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him and his pure progeny. Since Abdullah ibn Zubayr was an avowed enemy of the Ahlul Bayt, after the death of Ibn Zubayr, the Marwanid branch of the Umayyad regained power. Like the rest of the caliphs, Abdul Malik was also tyrant. In such adverse circumstances, Imam Zainul Abidin ably guided the Muslim Ummah. Condolences on the martyrdom anniversary of Shiite's fourth Imam, Imam Zainul Abidin, peace be upon him.
One of the narrators, he says, I saw a young man, a young child who was around the age of 7, Suba'i. I believe it is